Good afternoon to all our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International Volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Thanks to Canadian band Mr. Something Something from Toronto and the Afrobeat poet Ikwunga for our theme song, You Are Beautiful. My name's Jim Hutchings. This week I'm joined by our co-host Mona Hill and our intern Sean Dunham, who's, you heard him last week, and we're going to hear more from him, I'm sure. Before we get carrying on here, I have got one thing that I have to do for CJTR, and you may or may not be, you should be aware by now that the CJTR Look and Listen Lottery is in full swing. We're selling tickets for a complete audio-video makeover for your home with a grand prize of a 58-inch Panasonic 3D plasma TV with a home theater receiver, 3D Blu-ray player, complete surround sound speaker package, theater seating for three, stands for the TV and speakers, and installation in your home, a retail value of $10,040. Wonderful prize. Second is a 50-inch Panasonic plasma TV with a retail value of $1,100. Third prize is Monster Beats by Dr. Dre, an iPod Dock boombox with a retail value of $550. The draw is going to be Friday, June 17th at 5 p.m., and tickets are just $20 each. And you can get tickets from me or any other programmer at CJTR. You can come down to the station. Only 1,000 tickets will be sold. If you want more information, go to www.cjtr.ca. And, so we've got prizes have been supplied from Radio Center Consumer Electronics, so we're really grateful to them. So you can support Regina Community Radio by getting your tickets now for the Look and Listen Lottery. Now, having done that important bit of business, we're going to have a two-part show. In the first half hour, we're going to be talking with Amber Fletcher, chair of the Women's Information Network of Saskatchewan Network, okay, and Marcella Peterson of the National Farmers Union Women's Committee and the Public Workshop on Food Sovereignty. Our second half of the show will welcome Lelani Roy Wright, who was in her last year at Campbell Collegiate, and she'll be talking about the Traveling World Community Film Festival, which comes to Regina April 14th to 16th of this year. So, welcome Amber and welcome Marcella.
Hello.
Thank you.
Hello, everybody.
After all that.
Welcome back to Human Rights Radio. It's Mona here. Yeah, we've got a lot to cover in a half an hour, so let's get moving. Marcella Peterson is a certified reflexologist. She also is currently the women's advisory sort of person for the National Farmers Union Region Number 6. She loves the National Farmers Union. She does canvassing for them. Marcella is a rural woman. She's been involved in a lot of crafting, embroidery, wheat straw weaving, which is, I think, probably a prairie symbol, a symbol of the prairies, right? I don't know if they do this anywhere else, you know, in the world. I know that different indigenous cultures sort of do weaving with their local products and stuff, but wheat straw weaving is particularly indigenous to Saskatchewan, Manitoba, maybe a little bit in Alberta. Ukrainian egg decorating, beeswax, candle making, gardening, landscaping, and you also cross-country ski. Woman of many talents. You and your husband are beekeepers. You've got about 800 hives that you run with your daughter and your two sons, right?
Brothers.
Your two brothers, okay. And also you are an employer. You hire 6 to 10 student employees to help out with that. Is that sort of during the summer months? Or?
Yeah.
Okay. Another interesting thing about Marcella and her family is that they live in a passive solar heated home, and they have a small wood stove, and they're very concerned about energy and environmental issues. You joined the North Saskatchewan River Environmental Society a couple of years ago in a struggle to stop nuclear development and to encourage wind and solar energy uses and energy conservation. This is a product, sort of a conversation that we've had on Human Rights Radio about nuclear energy and nuclear power. You installed 4 wind turbines and currently installed solar panels for heating the honey house. That's incredible. I'm really impressed with that. So, and Amber Fletcher, let me see, I've got all this paper here, is not new to Human Rights Radio. She's a returning guest, and we're happy to see you. PhD candidate, something's happening today, isn't it, with that? Is there something happening with your PhD candidacy today?
Just a meeting.
Oh, okay, all right. At the research, Canadian Plains Research Center, your interdisciplinary research spans the areas of sociology, political economy, women's and gender studies, and specifically focuses on how federal agricultural policies affect farm women's labor. You're active with several community organizations, including the one that is supporting our other guest, Marcella's group today, the chair of the Women's Information Network of Saskatchewan. So welcome, both of you.
Thank you.
Let's talk about food for thought. The National Farmers Union is involved in Food for Thought. Do you want to sort of start off with the conversation, Marcella, and tell us a little bit about the Farmers Union?
Well, the Farmers Union has been working on what we call food sovereignty, I think, for years, but it wasn't given the term food sovereignty until the last 5 or 6 years, maybe with the involvement with Via Campesina, which is an organization of farm organizations throughout the world. And at a conference, they came up with what food sovereignty consists of. And so that's one of the things we want to discuss tomorrow. Basically, farm women are concerned about all aspects of life on the farm and all members of farm families. And I would go further to say that we're concerned about all peoples of the world, consumers as well. And my role is just to be sure that farm women's voice is heard. Many farm organizations do not have a women's voice. And so that's the role that I play in the National Farmers Union. And I represent all of Saskatchewan in my role.
Awesome.
As women's advisory.
Okay, okay. And you mentioned something about something occurring tomorrow, and that's an event called Food for Thought.
Yeah.
And it's in Regina.
The Food for Thought program is a program that I put together with Mary Nordic of Saskatoon, and it was about from the farmer to the consumer from a social justice perspective. And it's the social justice perspective that really concerns me. When you hear people talk about social justice issues, they never think about the farmer. And yet, to me, if we don't concern ourselves about that, we're soon going to be farmer extinct.
Why is that?
Well, currently, right now, we only represent 2% of the population. And it's government policy, it's our input costs, our what we get for our product, all those issues come into play, and it's a very extensive problem in terms of, like, there's many issues that affect why farmers aren't able to survive. So
are you concerned about the average family farmer as opposed to the corporate farming systems?
More so, yes. That's what the NFU is about. But there is no definition per se of family farm.
Oh, okay.
So, and you get into all kind of statistic kind of problems when you try thinking about what is a family farm, because okay. Many family farms are now incorporated, so.
Oh, okay. So this begs the question, something that in the information that Joanne sent me was, how will farm women and farm families be affected, and what does this mean for city dwellers? Because as a city dweller, as a city woman myself, this is very foreign information to me, and as it is to most of us, I think, who haven't come from a farming or a rural background. So, you know, thinking about a family farm, we're thinking about, you know, mom and dad and the kids and the uncles and the aunties, and maybe there's a community of families that have homesteaded and raised their families and spread out throughout the prairies. And that's what we think of, I think, in general, of what a family farm is. And now you're talking about incorporation. as a company, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the difference? How does that benefit a farmer? How does that benefit the production of food? How does that benefit all those issues?
Well, to my way of thinking, agriculture means culture takes time to grow. And I don't know how many years ago the government said it's going to be agribusiness. And to me, that says that you can get in and out of farming, you know, next week or whatever. And it doesn't work that way. Crops need time to grow. Breeding takes time to develop your herd and whatever you're involved in. So that's kind of some of the issues that need to be talked about.
Okay.
Another issue that bothers me is the fact that I heard one trucker took a truckload of apples to California. And when he got there, he unloaded them, turned around, picked up another load of apples, and brought them back to Canada. Does this make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, where is our, what are we doing?
I'm sitting here with my mouth hanging open.
And on that note, too, I would just like to add that I think what you're speaking to is definitely speaks to one of what I see as the major links between city dwellers, consumers of food, and the rural producers of food, and that is environmental thresholds. We're talking about shipping apples to California and then shipping apples back from California, which, if you think of the environmental impacts of that type of movement, which is largely facilitated by free trade agreements, that type of movement,
right.
If we look at the environmental implications of that, I think that leads us into what I see as one of the key reasons that people in cities should be concerned about the way our food is being produced. It's often shown that family farmers do have environmental awareness. They do engage in environmental practices on their farms, on their operations. Whereas, Mona, you were speaking about the corporatization of agriculture, and one of the key kind of points that I like to draw back to is the contrast between family farmers and their environmental awareness and, by contrast, the lack of environmental awareness on very large scale industrial farms, where we see the movement of waste onto the land in such large amounts that waste just can't be processed and dealt with by the land. So we do see, you know, the destruction of environmental systems, which should be a concern to all of us no matter where we live.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we're talking, first of all, going back to the trucking issues and taking apples south and bringing apples north, carbon footprint,
mm-hmm.
basically. Mm-hmm. Is that sort of where we're going with this? Because this is what everybody's talking about now,
mm-hmm.
and what we're doing. And then you're talking about waste on the land. If you're talking about, I'm trying to sort of clarify this for myself. If you have such a huge farm and you end up at the end of growing season, maybe, with enormous amounts of waste, which you do in any kind, the end of any, even in my own garden, I have that, in which I throw in the compost sort of thing. Is this where you're going with this? That the waste, it just gets to be too much and the land can't reprocess it until over the winter or whatever? Is that what you're talking about, or could you clarify that?
Well, it doesn't matter what part of the food system that you're talking about, there is, we actually give or lose 50% of our food right from the farm to the consumer.
How is that?
Well, I have a slide that I break down how much is lost in each one of those categories, but I don't have that off the top of my head.
Okay. But what are some of the ways that we do lose the 50%? Is it processing or is it
shipping? Well, you're gathering, you're processing. Okay. When you get it to your kitchen, how much do you cut off?
And, true, okay.
In the transportation system, how much is wasted? I actually heard of in Vancouver, if one of the, what do you call it, where they ship in big boxes.
Container shipping?
Yeah, but... anyway, if one of those gets damaged, mm-hmm. on the corner, for example, the whole thing goes into the garbage dump when you've got 11 cases out of 12 that are perfectly fine.
Okay.
That's a wastage of food.
Right.
So.
Okay. And the next question I have is, what about chemicals, the use of chemicals? Like, I know that farmers have been very concerned about that, using specific chemicals. And What would be the word? I'm looking for, you know, the big corporations that want to sell their seed that is resistant, but you have to use their chemicals and that kind of issue. And I know that, you know, GMO kind of food production, that Europe is pretty well banning it. How does that affect this issue?
Well, that's one of the things that we will be discussing or talking about, that...
Well, you have.
That's okay.
I was going to say, you have a situation where you don't own your seed anymore.
That's the direction they want to go.
Sure, exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something we should be concerned about, because they want to control from the seed right to the end consume. And sovereignty, to me, food sovereignty is about who controls the food. Is it farmers and consumers that are eating it and producing it, or is it the corporations who are taking control of the whole
gamut? The corporations will tell you that they're trying to make food production more efficient to feed the masses, kind of thing, and what they're actually doing is they're concentrating control in their own hands, where they provide the seed, and you can't take your seed from your crop, the way it's traditionally done, where part of your crop is next year's seed, right?
That's right.
And the way they genetically engineer the seed, it's like suicide seeds, where it won't work next year. You have to buy the seed from them again. And it's also, I think, designed so that it works with their pesticides, which they provide, which is added cost. You know, so it's all in their favor. You know, and meanwhile, we're putting ourselves at the mercy of the big corporations.
Exactly. And I think it's also important to point out the social implications of this phenomenon of increased genetic modification of seeds as well. And there was recently a lecture in Regina from Percy Schmeiser, who was, of course, the farmer who was sued by Monsanto and engaged in a legal battle with Monsanto. And one of the things he really spoke about was the fact that a lot of large agricultural corporations who manufacture seed, I mean, Monsanto manufactures 90% of GMO seeds, and what these types of corporations are doing to the social fabric of rural communities. One thing that he mentioned was that these corporations are now having farmers literally spy upon each other to see if their neighbor's crop has been whether, you know, it's been contaminated accidentally, whether they've tried to reuse seed a second year, which is something, you know, seed saving, something farmers have been engaged in for millennia. Yeah.
And there's currently, just this last week in the news, I talked about a libel suit against Monsanto by all farmers that they're starting
to fight back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to see if they can. Yeah. It's not quite formalized yet, that I understand, but they're something to do in the court system to see whether it is a suitable. Can't think of the word.
Whether it has merit.
The event that's being held tomorrow, the information that I have on it is it's part of a series that you're holding in different communities.
Yes.
And it's actually to honor International Women's Day, because that's something, an event that's just occurred recently. Mm-hmm. People from cities and farms want good quality food for themselves and their families. You also mentioned the need for water, for drinking and for growing food. So water is also an issue. Obviously.
Right.
Particularly on the prairies, water is a huge issue in North America. If we have a drought, we're in trouble, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
I just want to go back to the business about chemicals. I came across this summer, or should say last summer, one of the workers that came brought apples and left the core on the counter in our honey house, and we were finished for the season, so I took it home and put it in my compost pile. But you know, that core never turned brown.
Really?
And I thought, what are they doing to our apples?
Oh. Well, you know, I'm really glad you raised that point, because I have spent most of my life listening to health experts tell us, wash your food, wash your food, wash your food, and just recently again, wash your food because of the chemicals. My take on that is, and always has been, our food is porous. Mm-hmm. If there's brain chemicals, how on earth would washing the outside of an apple prevent us from ingesting the chemicals that are sprayed on our food every single year when they're growing? How would that prevent us from ingesting that chemical? And I think that's a good point.
Well, I don't know what they're doing to the apples that causes them to not turn brown, but it does concern me, and yeah. I want to find out. Yeah. And that's one of the reasons why I'm a member of the NFU, is those are the kinds of issues that we deal with, because it's our food. It's our...
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you.
it's... The something that's really interesting about the National Farmers Union here and the committee that you're on, it's talking about organizing, formulating, and articulating policy and serving as elected officers to ensure that the voices of farm women are clearly heard. Our Constitution provides for women's positions at every level of the organization. And you serve on National Farmers Union's committees dealing with issues ranging from farm economics, safety, to rural child care and community concerns, to national and international agriculture issues. So what I'm looking at here tells me that women are actually being listened to.
Hmm.
Do you feel you're being listened to?
Well, definitely are in the National Farmers Union, and I know the National Farmers Union is respected throughout Canada,
okay,
especially by consumers and our government. They don't like the information we give them, maybe, but we are usually called upon for information because they know we've done our research.
Okay, excellent. We have to wrap up in a few minutes. Before we do that, Amber, would you like to talk about the Women's Information Network? This is a new organization,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, we are new, as of 2009, actually. So we're still in the very organizational phase at this point. The reason that I'm here is because the Women's Information Network of Saskatchewan, or WINS, is playing a supportive role in tomorrow's National Farmers Union event. The reason that we're interested in doing that and the reason why we're getting involved in that is because the WINS originated out of a conference in Davidson in 2009 at which rural women came together to talk about the issue of leadership. And one of the issues that came out of that conference was what many rural farm small town women felt was a disconnect between themselves and their issues and their concerns and those of women and in people in general in the city. Mm-hmm. So the WINS originated as a type of information sharing initiative or mechanism that would enable a deeper understanding between rural and urban, and particularly rural and urban women. So that's our mandate. We're still getting going. We're working on all the organizational elements right now of building that information sharing mechanism. But really, of course, when you're speaking about linkages between rural and urban women, the issue of food and mm-hmm. food consumption and food production is particularly key in my mind in that respect. So we see events such as this one as extremely important.
So would you like to tell us about the event then, and how can people get there, and you know what it's all about? And it's tomorrow.
Okay, well, the event is called Food for Thought, From the Farmer to the Consumer, A Social Justice Perspective. It is tomorrow, Saturday, April 2nd, between 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. It's located at the United Way building at 1440 Scarth Street. And everyone is welcome, men, women, youth. And I particularly like on the poster, who should attend? Anyone who likes to eat.
Okay, and are there still tickets available? Do we have tickets? Okay, so if you want to get tickets, how do you do that?
Just, they should get a hold of Joanne.
Joanne Havelock?
Yeah.
Joanne Havelock has tickets. And you can call her at 535-9570. Or you can email her, but do it real quick, at Joanne, Joanne, dot Havelock, Havelock, at sastel.net. So if you're interested in food and food safety and food security and food sovereignty, come on out tomorrow and visit the booths and talk about this. And they'll be having food. You can actually eat there, too. It'll include lunch. It's $15. Thank you for joining us today. It's been very good having you.
Thank you.
And now, Jim, you have an announcement to make, don't you?
I do. Amnesty International has a Steak and Human Rights Night, a steak night at Bushwhacker Brew Pub. And it's going to be on Tuesday, April 19th from 5:30 to 8:30. Tickets are $25 in advance, and you can get them from any Amnesty International member. That would include Mona and myself. Or you can call 586-1938 or 585 0889. You can email nn.barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S, at sastel.net, or mordenrose, that's M-O-R-D-E-N-R-O-S-E, at hotmail.com. Proceeds go to Amnesty International to support human rights locally, nationally, and globally.
And get your tickets before Thursday, April 14th, because
yes,
we have to get the information into Bushwhackers so that they know how many meals to cook.
Indeed.
All right.
Yeah. So we're going to take a little break here now, and when we come back, I've got a musical selection from Dan Frechette that I think you're going to enjoy, and then we'll carry on and I don't know what
we're in the second half with Leilani.
Okay.
And traveling, what's it called? The Traveling Film Festival, Traveling World Film Festival. We have two guests going to join us. I see they're here, so we'll see you when we get back.
Hard by the company, they don't care that I'm down on my luck. And I'm sworn to secrecy, cause defamation ain't good for a buck. It ain't enough to bail out Wall Street, you got to bail out Main Street too. And if you give anybody even half a chance, you can see what good they'll do. But we're all running on nothing, and if our prayers are
was Dan Frechette, and the title of that was Wall Street Honeymoon, and we're back. Mona,
Hi, welcome back everyone to Human Rights Radio, and I'm Mona Hill, and I'm here with Jim Hutchings and Sean Dunham, and our guests in the second half are Abdullah and Leilani, who are grade 12 students at Campbell Collegiate. We're talking about something really exciting for everybody in Regina. It's the Traveling World Community Film Festival that's coming up on April 14th, 15th, and 16th. Welcome, Abdullah and Leilani. How would you like to just give us a little bit of information about yourselves, a little background, and how you got involved in the film festival?
So my name is Abdullah, and I live in Cathedral, Regina, and I'm currently attending Campbell Collegiate, and I'm in grade 12. It was actually Lonnie who first introduced this project, Traveling World Community Film Festival, to me. And in my school, I'm actually involved in Environmental Club and Debate Club, which somewhat are the cornerstone for my reason of joining this project. Because in our school, we're actually doing a four-year project of renovating a courtyard. But still, these actions are somewhat constricted in our schools. So I thought this would be a perfect opportunity to make a broader initiative to the entire city rather than just sticking to Campbell Collegiate.
Okay, wonderful. Taking something local and turning it into something global. It's awesome. Leilani?
So I go to Campbell, and I'm also in grade 12. And last year I did a really small film festival for a school project. And over the summer I went to visit my aunt, who started two film festivals, one in Peterborough and one in Antigonish. And so I talked to her, and then I decided that I wanted to put on like a bigger film festival this year. And so... Mainly just because I think that film is a really interesting way to educate people about things, and in this case it's social justice, human rights, and the environment.
Well, this is absolutely incredible. This film festival, I've got I don't know how many pages here of all these movies that are going to be available for us to see over the course of 3 days, April 14th, 15th, and 16th. So how would you like to start talking about the films and what the importance of the films, maybe some that you feel would be, I know they're all valuable to see, but maybe some of your favorites.
Well, I guess I could start off talking with the ones that I've seen.
Sure.
Yeah, so one of the ones that we're showing at Campbell is Real Engine. And I saw that when I went to the film festival with Courtney, and it's really interesting because it kind of talks about like stereotypes surrounding First Nations people in Canada and the U.S. And so I thought it'd be really like a really good one to have in the school, because I know that there's like a lot of those stereotypes in the school, and so it's really kind of pertinent to like where we live and stuff in Canada, rather than, although like some of them are really international, which is interesting too, but this kind of affects like our home, so I think it's really good that like to have it in the school.
Right. And if it was shown elsewhere, it would be known as an international film because it comes from Canada.
Yeah.
Right. And that's Real Engine, and that's an 85-minute film. Like, we're not talking necessarily about 2-hour films for the most part. They're some of them are about 80-something minutes. I'm looking at 65 minutes, half an hour films, and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. There's one here, Good Morning Africa, that's 90 minutes. So they're not extensively long films, so you have an opportunity maybe to see a couple of them in one evening or whatever.
Yeah, okay.
What other film did you think would be really interesting to talk about?
Well, we also had... another film that I really liked when I saw it was Schooling the World. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really interesting. We're showing it at the Legion on Friday, and it kind of explores education around the world. And it's interesting because often when we talk about education, we talk about bringing education to underdeveloped countries. But it was interesting because it kind of looked at the actual effects of it and that we might be going at it the wrong way. So.
Oh, how so?
Well, often, like, when we talk about educating, you know, third world countries or something, we kind of bring to them our own, like, Western kind of education system, but for, like, an agricultural society or something, kind of bringing people away from, it was focusing on people in Ladakh.
And where?
Ladakh, which is kind of, like, in India, it's a part of India.
All right.
And so the people there, they lived in this remote kind of village. But when people would go away to get educated in a university, when they come back, they have no idea, like, how to kind of survive in their own town. And so they'd end up going back to living in the city. But eventually this town was just kind of getting emptied out because people were going away and then never coming back. So it was interesting. How it
So there was a lack of education in terms of their own environment and their own sort of situation.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, it really was.
Wow. Abdullah, was there anything
Well, Alani has touched mainly on the social rights and social justice and human rights categories. So I'm just going to focus more on the environmental part.
Sure.
So I guess one of the movies I liked was The Vanishing of the Bees, which basically just talks about how like the bees around the world are actually decreasing in population by a lot, and how this is actually affecting so many industries. And it's actually called the colony collapse disorder, where if the bees actually go away, then it's actually going to affect the industries responsible for apples, broccoli, watermelon, onion, cherries, and so many more. So that's, I really thought that would be really interesting to show.
Yeah, I think that's something important, and it connects to our previous guests who were talking about food sovereignty.
Yeah.
And one of our previous guests, if you weren't here at the top of the hour, was a beekeeper. So she probably wants to see that movie.
Yeah.
Wow. What else?
There's another one, it's called Water on the Table. Uh-huh. So I guess we all know that water is essential for life, right? So This basically covers the fact that the water we're getting is modified so much by so many different companies that there's so much stuff involved, like such as chemicals and stuff, and basically it's how commercial industries are making so much profit out of this and it's not completely clean water, and we're also running out of water at the same time in general, so it's kind of creating this dilemma of clean water and I guess manipulated kind of thing.
Okay, right. I think that's a really important issue.
Mm-hmm.
Something that they're talking about now is making sure that people understand there's no chlorine in water.
Yeah.
And yet I grew up in an era of chlorine is so important to put in the water to prevent tooth decay.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely. Back in I think it started maybe in the 1950s. I know I grew up in Winnipeg, and that was really important that we have chlorine in our water, and so our population will have less tooth decay, and it'll be better for our health. And now things are turning around.
I should turn my mic up. That would help. Fluoride, is that something to do similar to fluoride?
Probably, yeah. I'm using the wrong word, Jim. Thanks for cutting that in. Yeah, fluoride, not chlorine, but fluoride in the water. And now they're saying that they wanted to take fluoride out of the water because of health issues.
And Regina does not have fluoride, and Saskatoon does, but I think they've temporarily shut down their fluoride system.
Right, so I don't know what the issues are at all.
Yeah.
And what else? Maybe what you could do is talk about where these films are and how people can, do they have to buy tickets, or how do you attend the films?
You can buy tickets on Thursday afternoon. There's going to be films at Campbell, and it's just open to the students, so you don't have to buy tickets for that. But the public can also come if they want. The venues might be a little bit more full because there's classes, so the seating might be a little spotty, but definitely if you see a film that's interesting, you can definitely come and see that one.
So that's Thursday, April 14th at Campbell Collegiate?
Yeah, from 8:30 to 3:30 in the afternoon.
Okay, and so this will be open. They're basically, are they going to shut down the school for the day for classes and have the film festival for all the students as well?
No, the teachers are just signing up. They're made so that a lot of the the films are just an hour so that they can fit in a class.
Okay.
And so classes that, say, are a history class would be maybe interested in some of the human rights ones. So they would go to the film for their class, and then they'd go back, or a science class would go to an environmental one.
Okay.
So they're just at two venues in the school.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay. And then where else can they see the films?
Then on Thursday night, Friday night, and Saturday.
And what time?
On Thursday it starts at 7, and it's at Campbell Collegiate.
Okay.
And then for that one, there's tickets. And then Friday, it also starts at 7, but it's at the Legion and the Cathedral Community Center.
Where's the Legion?
It is on, I'm not sure what street it is, but if you go to the Cornwall, the mall, it's right in front of the bay entrance there. So it's kind of, I should get the address actually, but it's kind of,
we'll give people your phone number or your contact information, and they can call you. How's that?
Yeah, that would be good.
Okay.
It's right by the downtown library.
Okay.
It's really close to there.
Okay.
And then the Cathedral Community Center is on 13th Avenue.
Oh, wonderful. Okay.
And so on Friday, it's at those two venues at the same time, so there's films going at both.
How many films are there altogether?
There's in the program that we get, there's about 27, but we don't show quite 27. We show probably about 20, I'd say.
About 20 films. So you have a wide variety of choices. You could just If you could take a couple of days off work.
Yeah.
No, it's just an evening, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. The only thing I'm interested in is how did you pitch this to the school, to Campbell Collegiate? Was it you that went to somebody at the school and the two of you and said, hey, we want to do this? How did that work?
Well, we, first of all, like when we started in the fall, I just wanted to get some people together. So one of my teachers from last year, Mrs. Van Hesteren, had said she was interested in helping. So I contacted her, and she contacted Joanne. And so
Joanne Havelock.
Yeah. And so that was the three of us. And then one of my friends said she wanted to join too. And so there's the four of us, and we were kind of our committee. And then we didn't actually. And then Abdallah joined, and then Taylor and Jenny, the two other people in our group, joined. So. Then we, like this winter, we went to a Campbell Community Council meeting,
mm-hmm.
and we just talked to them about it, and they were really supportive, and we talked to the principal of the school, and he thought it was a really good idea. So, as soon as we kind of talked to them, we went to their one meeting, the Campbell Community Council, and they were just really enthusiastic. So,
wow.
Yeah, and then we kind of booked the places at the school, and yeah. So.
And then was it your group that got together to talk to maybe the Cathedral Neighborhood Center and the Legion?
Yeah, well, like, the Legion, we kind of had different people from our group contact each one.
Mm-hmm.
So Joanne and I went to look at the Legion just to see if it was, like, a good venue. And then so she contacted the man in charge there. And then she also contacted the Cathedral Community
Wonderful.
Center.
That's I have an address for the Legion here.
Oh, you do? Thank you.
It's 1820 Cornwall Street.
20 Cornwall Street.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. And Joanne Havelock is with the Women's Information Network, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Saskatchewan. And they're also not only supporting the food sovereignty event tomorrow, but also this... I have a hard time remembering the name of this event. The Traveling World Community Film Festival.
Mm-hmm.
How many places has it been in so far? How long has it been going on?
This year?
The whole history. Go ahead.
Well, it started in Courtney 20 years ago. And so it was just a group of people there that wanted to start a film festival. So they kind of compiled a program. And then... they had it for a few years, and then eventually they got it so that they negotiated with the filmmakers for a price. And so the filmmakers would sell it to them, and then they would, other programs across Canada could kind of buy it for them or from them, and they have the public performing rights for one showing. And so it travels across Canada. Mm. So this year it's been, from what I can remember, it's been in Courtney, Vancouver, Prince George... and then I'm not sure if this has happened yet, but I know this year it's also going to Winnipeg, Antigonish, Salt Spring Island, Nanaimo, and that is all I can remember.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah, so it's basically going from all the way from the west to the east end of Canada. So.
I've never heard of this before.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm really impressed. The other thing I wanted to ask you is are there other organizations that are supporting this?
Yes, Amnesty is supporting
it. Amnesty International is one,
Also, so the Campbell Community Council is also mm-hmm. supporting it. And Yoga Haven, company, and Clean Green Regina might be helping with it.
Clean Green Regina?
Yeah.
Okay.
And University of Regina as well, they said they were going to offer
ARPERG and
sponsorship.
Wonderful.
University of Regina.
Okay.
And I think that's... it, from what I can remember. I hope I'm not forgetting anything.
Okay.
And we've actually had some fundraisers done at our school to raise mm-hmm. some money, so that's also pitched in a lot.
And what did you need the money for?
Well, we need to pay for the programs for the films, and so we need to pay for that, and then the venues. We've also gotten actually both the Legion and the Cathedral Community Center gave us a really generous donation so that the venues were less. So that was great. And so for the venues, and then we have to cover the cost of the food because we're going to be selling food.
Oh, okay.
Although,
so we can eat and watch movies.
Yes.
Popcorn. popcorn and Eat Healthy Foods actually has helped us by giving us some food. So they're also helping. And so we needed the money for the food, the venues, the equipment, which the Catholic School Board is actually helping us with.
That's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And so are you going to be able to cover all your costs? You're doing okay with that?
We predicted that we'll have some profit.
It looks like we're going to, well, no, about profit, but it looks like we're going to cover our costs.
Yeah. And if you do get a profit, you can throw it into the next social activism event or something. Where did the two of you see yourselves going in the future? Because this is a big project you've taken on. And I'm assuming that this isn't somewhere you're going to stop with as far as social activism goes and human justice and human rights issues.
Yeah. Well, this will be our last year in Campbell Collegiate. So once I graduate, I'm probably going to go some other city for university. Okay. So I'm probably thinking that if they don't have it, I'll probably go and hopefully start one through Lalani's help. Okay. I'll get in contact with her and she can help me through that process.
Yeah.
Or if they already have one, then I can just contribute more.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you see yourself branching out into any other area of human rights, Abdallah?
Not really at the moment.
Okay.
I'm just more focused on university and medicine kind of thing. So, yeah,
okay.
I'm that kind of person.
All right. Yeah. Well, that's definitely a human rights issue.
Yeah, I guess.
Is health, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, on a global scale.
Well, I guess one option for me after becoming a doctor is Doctors Without Borders, but that's
beautiful.
A long way, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like to have a Social Workers Without Borders.
I haven't looked it up,
but I haven't heard of it. It would be great. And what about you, Lenani? Where do you plan on taking this in the rest of your life?
Well, I'd like to continue at least helping with this film festival, but I'm not going to university next year, so I think I'll have some time to maybe kind of start some sort of project. I'm not sure if maybe I'll go to another country to help there or stay here and work here on sort of human rights issues, but I think they'll definitely be a part of next year because I'm taking kind of a year to...
Where do you plan on going to university? What do you plan on studying?
Well, I haven't actually decided.
Okay.
I'm not going right away next year, so I'm going the year after, so I have to kind of think about it, but my kind of possibilities right now are... law or social work or something.
Right. Social work rocks, by the way.
Or journalism.
Yeah. If you haven't guessed by now, I'm a social worker. How much time have we got left, Jim?
Oh, we've still got about 6 minutes.
Okay.
Sure.
So is there anything that you wanted to talk about that we haven't covered about the film festival?
I guess the pricing of the tickets is one major thing. We'll actually be selling the tickets at Campbell after school on the 14th. Thursday to the students, so they can actually buy the tickets if they want to bring their family along to show them to show the films.
How much are the tickets?
Per person it's $5 or family, or I think for the weekend it's $10.
And this is for any film you want to see during the course of the weekend?
For youth it's $5 a day or $10 a weekend, and then for adults it's $10 a week. A day or $15 a weekend, and for families it's $20.
Okay, so I could purchase a $15 ticket and I could see any film I want on Thursday, Friday, or Saturday.
Yeah.
That's wonderful. That's kind of like the Blues Festival used to be.
Yeah.
That was exactly the same. Yeah. Anything else you wanted to finish up with?
You can also get tickets at, we're going to be dropping them off soon at eHealthy Foods so that you'll be able to pick them up there, or the RPERG office.
And where is that?
That's at the university.
What does RPERG stand for our listeners?
Research. Just a second.
Regina Public Interest Research Group. Okay, great. And that's at the university?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Anything else?
Or you can contact anyone that's in the group to get tickets. So.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your time. I think this is a wonderful event coming up. And once again, that's called the Traveling World Community Film Festival on April 14th, 15th, and 16th. And there's 20 different films that you can choose from. Can spend a whole week there. We have 5 minutes?
We do.
Okay, we're going to fill 5 minutes. Jim, do you need to do your advertisement again?
I'm sure that we could say more about that because it's a really important way to support Regina Community Radio. And we encourage everybody to get your tickets now for the Look and Listen Lottery. And tickets are just $20 each. There's only 1,000 tickets to be sold, so your chances of winning are excellent. And the grand prize is a 58-inch Panasonic 3D plasma TV with home theater receiver, 3D Blu-ray player, complete surround sound speaker package, theater seating for three, and stands for the TV and speakers. And you don't have to put it together yourself. Installation is included. A retail value of $10,040. Second prize is a 50-inch Panasonic plasma TV with a retail value of $1,100. Third prize is Monster Beats by Dr. Dre, iPod Doc, Boombox with a retail value $550. Those prizes furnished by Radio Center Consumer Electronics. Now, the draw is going to happen on Friday, June 17th at 5. And for more tickets and information, you can just go to the website, the CJTR website, www.cjtr.ca. You can call the station during business hours at 525-7274, and we'll fix you up with tickets. And you can email us at lookandlistenlottery@cjtr.ca. So that's all I have to say about that.
And you know what I'm going to do just before we leave is I'm going to just sort of go through the list of some of these films. The other thing I was going to ask you is how do people find out what films are showing where? Is there a website or somewhere they can go?
There's a Facebook group, actually.
Facebook group?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so if you just go on Facebook, it's the Traveling World Community Film Festival, and there's a group, and then on the group there's events for each of the nights, so
okay.
Then you can go to each
Excellent.
Night.
So those of you who aren't currently Facebook friends, get a Facebook account and you can find out. But I was just going to go over a few of them. Besides the ones that Leilani and Abdullah have talked about, Dirt, the movie, Chimerical, Dirty Business, Water on the Table, The Dark Side of Chocolate, Split Estate, Good Morning Africa, Vanishing of the Bees. There's all descriptions of the movies. Facing Call of Life, Facing the Mass Extinction. Chimerical is an award-winning film. It's from the creator of the award-winning film Garbage, The Revolution Starts at Home. And this is Chimerical explores the life cycle of everyday household cleaners and hygiene products. The Dark Side of Chocolate, of course, is about International Labor Rights Forum and how we eat chocolate produced by trafficked children. And I think that happens quite often in the Ivory Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I'm working on, getting a show together to do that and talk about that for the future. We have 2 minutes left. What else is here? Dirty Business. Two social and environmental costs of coal power. The stories of innovators who are pointing the way to an alternative green energy future. Fresh, which is a look at the problems and consequences of our current industrialized food system. Good Morning Africa. It follows four women from four different African nations who run a garage called Femme Motors in Dakar. And these different women have their own businesses. Hope Builders, the future of the world, is being played out in an elementary school in Quebec, where a teacher is implementing a new teaching method aimed at preparing children to take up environmental challenges. So it sounds like the majority of these films are about environmental issues, about human rights issues.
Mm-hmm.
So if this is something that interests you, by all means, go to the Facebook page. And is that how they get in touch with you? Through Facebook?
Yeah, there is also through email. If you
okay.
go to send an email to... I guess I could say mine.
Yeah.
LEILANI-7@hotmail.com.
Okay.
So,
well,
yeah.
Thank you both for coming and
You're
talking
welcome.
About the Traveling World Community Film Festival.
Thank you.
And that's Human Rights Radio for today, and we'll see you next week.
As we close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. We're volunteers with Amnesty International, and our goal is to increase the awareness of and contribute to a discussion of human rights issues at home and around the world. To discover how you can contribute to the abolition of human rights violations and visit our website, you visit our website at amnestysaskatchewan.ca, or you can check out our Facebook group at Amnesty International Saskatchewan and follow the links. And it's our Peter Benenson, the founder. That's right. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."